rocka, 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 door tank. Oh, yeah, baby. Some of that. Oh, you know, I know you can do it. So, honey, get to it. Oh, somebody play some.
That's Harlan born, Springfield, Massachusetts raised, multi instrumentalist and singer Taj Mahal, also known as Henry St. Clair Fredericks Jr. You know that he's from the Caribbean. His father was. But the number one track on his 2008 release, Maestro. It marked his 40th year in the business and was nominated in 2009 for Best Blues Contemporary Album. He's still going strong at age 74, and absolutely committed to growing his own food in Hawaii. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And there's a reason I reached for Taj Mahal and the song that says, just scratch my back, I'm itching. I don't know where to scratch, he says. Because, of course, this I'm talking about Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party. Burn, that's spelled B-U-R-N. Well, before I get to that story, I thought I would make a note of something quite ironic. Over the weekend, of course, and in the aftermath of the massacre in Orlando, which is being, highly politicized, and, of course, there's reason to be very, very concerned about the tragedy and so forth. We discussed this. But not to detract from it, we also discussed how the tragedy is being mined for political purposes. And we saw that in Manhattan over the weekend, where the great and the legendary Gay Pride Parade was held, one of many hundreds around the country. And I had a chuckle because the media covered, Hillary Clinton and a group of elected officials, including the mayor and Al Sharpton, who refused. He learned this trick from Jesse Jackson. Absolutely plant yourself next to the person, the big star, and don't move no matter what, because in every picture, from every angle, you're going to be in it. So he was right there, right at the side of Hillary Clinton, and I had to laugh because they were covering this as if this band of officials were, they're saluting the community. And I thought the funniest thing of all was members of the band were actually part of the community, the gay community. They haven't yet declared it. That was the news to me. I thought it was funny. Well, he continues to make speeches and statements attesting the viability of the so-called political revolution he ignited with his presidential bid. And he vows to bring it to fruition at next month's nominating convention in Philadelphia and beyond. But the independent, that's the capital I, as in the independent party, independent political person, the independent senator from Vermont, no question is feeling the Clinton Democratic Party burn. B-U-R-N. He's feeling it big time. He's already announced that he will vote for Hillary in November in the interest, naturally, of party unity. Remember, we talked about that. But Sanders still has not definitively declared what he will do with the 13 million plus votes he won, except that the people should take things from here. So we're going to be talking about these predictions we had made. Remember, I've been discussing this since September last year. And we've been following the development. We've been on point. We haven't been off course on this matter at all, in which we've talked about the startling similarities between Sanders' campaign and other progressive Democrats and their false flag presidential campaigns that started out looking and sounding and smelling and feeling like popular movements, but in the end served only to bolster the political fortunes of the Democratic Party's power elite. Well, here's what I think we ought to listen to. Here's a short clip of Bernie Sanders on the Morning Joe program last Friday, discussing, among other things, the Brexit vote. We'll talk about that later on in the week. We had our primer, a very comprehensive analysis from Professor Gerald Horn, if you remember. But he is discussing here also how he will vote come November. Here's Cousin Bernie.
Going to vote for Hillary Clinton in November?
Yes. Yeah, I think the issue right here is I'm going to do everything I can to defeat Donald Trump. I think Trump, in so many ways, will be a disaster for this country if he were to be elected president. We do not need a president whose cornerstone of his campaign is bigotry, is insulting Mexicans and Latinos and Muslims and women, who does not believe in the reality of climate change, when virtually every scientist who has studied this issue understands we have a global crisis. This is not somebody who should become president. What my job right now is to fight for the strongest possible platform in the Democratic Convention. And as we speak in St. Louis, that's going on right now. Mm-hmm. And that means a platform that represents working people, that stands up to big money interests. And that's what we're trying
to
do.
So your vote will be a vote for Hillary Clinton or against
Hillary Clinton? Well, I don't want to parse words right now. What I am trying to do right now is to make sure that the Democratic Party becomes a party that represents working people, not Wall Street.
So
that is prepared. That is prepared to have an agenda that speaks to the need of creating millions of jobs, raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour, dealing with climate change, dealing with pay equity. Those are the issues that we need to have, not only in a platform, but we need Democratic leadership to be implemented.
So, Senator, just to put a button on this, you said you'll vote for Hillary Clinton, which means you won't vote for yourself. Well, have you accepted that you won't be the nominee?
I'm pretty good at arithmetic, and what I know is that Hillary Clinton has more pledged delegates than I do, and she has a lot more superdelegates than I do. But what I also know is we're bringing 1,900 delegates into the convention, that we have received 13 million votes, and that what I am going to be doing right now, and I'm starting this afternoon, heading up to Syracuse for an event this evening, is we are going to be urging millions of people to get involved in the political process. You may recall last week I did a speech on the internet, and I said, get involved and run for school board, run for city council, run for state legislature. You know how many people responded? 20,000 people. So what we want to do is reinvigorate the Democratic Party, bring new blood in, and have a party that represents
working
people. So
if you've accepted the arithmetic of the race and you realize that she's likely to become the nominee, why not withdraw from the race?
Why would I want to do that when I want to fight to make sure that we have the best platform that we possibly can, that we win the most delegates that we can, and that we transform? The goal of our campaign was to transform this nation.
So the disunity isn't putting her at any disadvantage.
Look,
against Donald Trump.
You talk about disunity. I talk about involving the American people in the political process and wanting to have a government and a party that represents all of us. When you have disunity, what we're talking about is kids can't afford to go to college or leaving college $50,000 in debt. People dying because they don't get to a doctor when they should. Talk about disunity is the fact that we have 47 million people living in poverty. What we want is a government that represents all of us, and that's what I intend to fight for.
So I've been writing about you off and on and listening to your voice off and on.
I know that, Mike.
For years and years and years. You've been talking about the same issues consistently for 50 years. And now, in your presidential campaign, and you just referenced it, you know, people's needs, working people's right. needs, jobs leaving this country. But it seems today, and yesterday's vote is another indication of it, this tide of globalization that cannot be stopped. And millions of people in this country and in Europe basically asking themselves, where do I fit in this going forward? Where do they fit?
Mike, that's the right question. And that's a question that we should be always asking and have asked 20 years ago. I was in Indiana a few months ago. Two factories there being shut down, over 2,000 workers thrown out on the street. Company United Technologies, a very profitable corporation, moving to Monterrey, Mexico, paying people $3 an hour. What do you think the people in Indiana feel about globalization? Right? What we have got to do is create an economy, and this is not that hard, that works for all of us, not just the people on top. Unfettered free trade may be good for multinational corporations. You know what? It is not good for the middle class and many workers. So we have got to shape trade policies, and you can do that. American workers, in my view, should not have to compete against people in Vietnam who make a minimum wage of 65 cents an hour. That's my view. And you know what? I think most people agree with that. Does that mean to say we build a wall around America, that you don't have any trade? That is absolutely not what I am saying. Trade is a good thing. International cooperation is imperative. But you got to pay attention to the working people of this country, not just to the CEOs who love these things, who write these trade agreements.
We've got a lot more to talk.
Okay. Well, we heard a lot. And we heard a lot that was predicted by yours truly and others. Remember, I started asking early on in the game, what is Bernie Sanders' constituency prepared to do to hold him accountable? Here we have him absolutely genuflecting before, well, he's Jewish, so he doesn't genuflect. I'm sorry, wrong term. But here we have him kowtowing to the Democratic Party, basically doing a bait and switch. He started this out as a political movement, did he not? Wasn't this supposed to be a people's movement? This was supposed to be the political revolution that we were all waiting for, at least a whole bunch of people were waiting for, 13 million and counting. And we have him actually saying, so he can't deny it, he will vote, not only will he vote for Hillary, he has also changed focus, but he hasn't told anybody. Because now the primary objective is to defeat Donald Trump, and the primary objective is to make sure that the Democratic Party gets an infusion of oxygenated blood, presumably coming from the very Reformation that he supposedly ignited. All those people who voted for Bernie Sanders for this revolution have already been corralled and herded like cattle into the Democratic Party. And instead of people revolting against him, those 13 million, instead of them saying, hey, you're not going to take us down the road that Jesse Jackson took us down in 1984 and 1988, that Dennis Kucinich took us down. Dennis Kucinich did the same thing. We talked about that in 2004 and again in 2008. And Barack Obama did in 2008 and 2012. You're not going to take us down that road again. You come out of this political quagmire that people are experiencing, where the Democrats are the Republicans and the Republicans are the Democrats, and they are caught between the devil and the deep blue sea, neither party actually being relevant to their social, political, or economic futures. And looking for something else. Jackson gave them the hope. he kept hope alive with this Rainbow Coalition that he systematically and personally dismantled and destroyed. So it had absolutely no chance, independent of him, no chance whatsoever of surviving the primary process, although he did very well. He did very well. But he personally dismantled it. He personally destroyed it. So that to this day, nobody anywhere in the country could run for office, which is what now Sanders is urging, that people get involved in the political process, he says. That's what this whole thing is about. We have another redefinition for the purpose of this political revolution. The purpose of the revolution, he said, is to get involved. Based on what? Get involved in what? With what? Where is the system? Where is the mechanism to get involved? Except that you get involved in the architecture of a party that means to put your lights out. It hasn't done anything for you. And then, you know, they act like these things are their personal possessions. Now, I'm not questioning at all that Bernie Sanders really believes in his heart of hearts in making a difference in this world. But he is a politician, and it shows. And he has run the same lot. Trust me. Trust me. While I sing the songs, the sweet refrains in your ears about hope and justice and equality and all the other wonderful ideals that the Democratic Party has ceased to be. In fact, practically never was. This is the party of the slavocracy, South. We must never forget that. And despite all these platitudes from the likes of Jesse Jackson and Dennis Kucinich and Barack Obama, and now Bernie Sanders, we're back exactly where we started from in recent history, back in 1984. There is no architecture. There was no plan to build one. Now, says Bernie, let the people take it from here. I have gone along as far as I could, and I'm going to vote for Hillary because, well, she's better than Donald Trump as a choice. Really? I think you need to re-examine that statement, Mr. Sanders. But he's very, very democratic, with a capital D. He's a party man. And I'm not hearing the decibels coming from the rank and file here saying, oh no, Bernie, you don't get to do that. You don't get to cut and run, and you don't get to betray the revolution. You got to pay a price for that. And the price is we got to out you. We've got to publicly cancel your contract. I mean, how many times do you go down this path? Dr. James Petras, P-E-T-R-A-S, I shared with you an article published in Politico that he wrote. Dr. James Petras is the professor emeritus of sociology at Binghamton University, who had written more than 62 books, many of them translated into more than 28 languages. An extraordinary intellect. And he talked about this concept of how so-called progressives are used by the Democratic Party as a kind of mutual arrangement in which they emerge on the political scene, especially in these presidential contests, as a logical choice. Somebody you could believe in because they share ideals just like you. They're talking to you, the disaffected, the rejected, the people who have been put to the periphery of politics. These are the people they attract. And they talk that talk. And they galvanize a number of constituencies that heretofore had no real history of consistent contact with each other, let alone working toward a common objective, a common political objective. They just emerge on the scene and they make sense. They talk about the uselessness of war, like Barack Obama did. And yet, what did we see? The most warmongering administration was his. We talk about Donald Trump and his nasty attitude toward immigration. Well, you know, Barack Obama did and has deported more than 2 million people. And he did and has incarcerated women and children. Now, you have to put the two together. We weren't paying attention to Jesse Jackson's chicanery and treachery because what? One, he was a black guy, nice and nice looking. And his thing was keep hope alive. That's right. Keep hope alive, brother. Just vote for me. Give me your vote. And then comes the inevitable meeting where Jesse Jackson discards any responsibility he had to more than 11 million people who voted for him in 1988, 4 million more than voted for him in 1984, and literally went for broke. He didn't even request 30 pieces of silver. His thing was to prove what an asset he was to the Democratic Party because he could take all these sheep, these political sheep that he has corralled, and hand them over to the Democratic Party. And he is the king, presumptive kingmaker. He can't be king. He might as well be kingmaker. Well, he served a purpose for a while because the black vote and the Latino vote, and the labor vote, and some of the other constituencies that came together under the so-called Rainbow Coalition, fell for his drivel. And to this date, have not held him accountable for not just abandoning the cause, but meticulously destroying it. Any potential it has of succeeding at existing independently either of him or the Democratic Party. Kucinich came right after that. Now what is he talking about? All the things that people in the progressive community want to hear. He's talking about wars. He's disgusted with wars and the Defense Department spending so much money on wars. He wants an efficient national health care system, a minimum wage. He's anti-Wall Street. He's anti-high taxes. In other words, he's picking up from where Jackson left off. He came out of nowhere. But again, a gullible progressive community stretching across a pretty broad spectrum of political life managed to galvanize itself and lend credible support to Kucinich. Well, what did you see? Kucinich went out with a whimper, but not before he pledged allegiance to party unity. Oh, yes, because when he sat down and thought about it in his quiet moments, he figured that he has to have a thing called an afterlife, a political afterlife, and he wouldn't have one if he rankles the power elite within the party. So let's play it safe and show them that, yeah, I don't mean any harm. I'm not going to destroy you. I'll play ball. And so he did. Now, all those votes that Kucinich managed to wrangle basically went to the Democratic Party without a fight. Then comes the sweet man, Barack Obama. Nice teeth, a good nuclear family, 2.2 kids, a dog named Spot, a Harvard man, well-educated, from a very interracial family. And all of these wonderful credentials he had, he's young and vibrant, and he is the guy who had made arrangements with the Democratic Party, controlled by the Clintons. He's a creature of the Clintons. And he went along with it. He said, all right, you support me, I'll take care of you once I'm in there. By this time, by the time Barack Obama came along, the Democratic Party wasn't sure where it stood with its historic support. That is primarily from African American, Latino, the labor movement, and other progressive entities. They weren't sure where they stood, but they were sure that they were losing. They were losing votes like crazy to the Republicans. They had no answers at all, no meaningful answers for how you reconstruct this out-of-control system so as to get the people docile enough, distracted enough, not to think about their interests, but to think about the survival of the party first. Because we have to support the Democratic Party. Otherwise, the Republicans are going to take over. What a really crazy rationale that was, but it worked. And they groomed this guy from Chicago. Well, you know what Chicago means in the political world? Chicago equals corrupt politics, period. But he's a byproduct of that. But we dispensed all of the normal and rational misgivings that we should have had, because he is a nice-looking guy with good teeth. And he's a brother. So let's give him a chance. And Barack Obama raised more money than at any point in political history. A machine just catapulted this man and launched him into political orbit. And it was all designed. And once there, he successfully got all of the people that were looking to him to change things. He successfully encouraged them to ignore their interests and pay attention instead to other things, like how tough it is to be a black president. What a challenge it is. And we should be sympathetic and patient while he increases the prison population to the largest in the world, primarily of people of color and the poor. We discussed how Donald Trump can't even hold a candle to him with respect to immigration, hostile immigration policies. We talked about the unemployment rate under Obama, the record number of schools shut down in major and predominantly people of color cities like Detroit and Chicago, the threat to the direct threat to public education, where to the point where we don't have a public school in New Orleans. There isn't one. And we see record unemployment, especially among young black teenagers of working age. We had a record of some close to 80% unemployment in some places. You saw the unbridled permission the police had to just shoot and kill. His Justice Department finding it impossible to prosecute. See? And those are just some of the attributes that this constituency, there are people today who are angry with me, people who are total my friends. They're still mad at me because I have very little regard for the political purpose of Barack Obama. I understand what he was there for and what he achieved. It had nothing to do with the interest of the constituencies that galvanized themselves in order to launch him and the Democratic Party into political orbit and kept him and the party there, so as to come to this point where we are looking at the fourth incarnation of this madness. The contest, the so-called contest between Bernie Sanders, the self-described democratic socialist, and Hillary Clinton, who believes she is just basically the queen, who deserves to be president. Now that's where we are. So ruthless is the system that not even a well-meaning guy like Sanders can stand his ground against it. It will utterly and completely destroy him. And perhaps he has thought about his political afterlife. He's still got a couple of good breaths left in him. He still wants to do something in the U.S. Senate. He does not want to go out with a whimper. So he'll play nice. He never indicated at all throughout his campaign that he had problems with this party, this wretched party that has ceased to be relevant to the people who have been supporting it so faithfully for so many years, to their detriment, by the way. He does not have the courage to set in motion, although he's more than halfway there, to set in motion something that can outlive him, to institutionalize the struggle. He's telling people, well, you should now take it from here and get involved. Well, with what system? Get involved with what system? You haven't constructed one, and you ain't gonna. You have no intention to construct an alternative political system, i.e. party. So that after this contest, there will be very little, if anything, to show that those 13 million votes were translated into the construction of a system that, independent of the Republican and Democratic Party, can sustain political candidacies at every level across the United States. That's the problem. And that's why he has to be publicly upbraided and his contract publicly canceled. He no longer qualifies, and people should have seen that. We tried telling you this. I was known for saying, especially as it applied to the African American and Latino communities, you have to be ruthless in public, in politics, ruthless and obsessive about your interests. That's the only way to play this political game. If I support you, it means that I have a license to control you. I have a means to flex my muscles. I will not allow you to just slink off and do whatever you want with my vote. That's not going to happen. But the exact opposite has happened here, and probably because of embarrassment. Nobody wants to publicly say to Bernie Sanders or about Bernie Sanders, you have failed. And we're dumping you. People didn't support Bernie Sanders because they believe the Democratic Party ought to be reformed. They supported Bernie Sanders because they thought that the Democratic Party ought to be dumped and destroyed. Not reformed. You can't reform that. The duopoly cannot be reformed. All these years, they have meticulously placed brick by brick to construct their edifices and to make them impervious to change. It's like the Catholic Church. I crack up every now and then. You hear about a priest who has some idea that he's going to reform the Catholic Church. Well, good luck with that. Do you think they spent hundreds of years and all this money and erected this intricate hierarchy and this complex governance so as to make it easy for you to change things? Absolutely not. It is designed to resist change. So the logical starting point, both for Sanders and the people who were supporting him, the logical starting point would be, yes, we're supporting you, hoping, and we will work very hard to achieve the objective of having you succeed. But there's a parallel track. If you do not succeed, we want it so that your candidacy will spawn indeed a revolution. We are taking our political currency out of the Democratic Party and building something else that works, or that has the potential of working. Now, if you're not dedicated to that, if you're not dedicated to the long haul, then don't bother to run. Or if you're running, then don't look to us for support. We see an opportunity in your candidacy, Mr. Sanders, to make a very, very important change at this time. And the change we want is to rankle, if not destroy, but certainly put a major dent in the power of the duopoly. And since we are members of those broad constituencies that historically have been the bread and butter of the Democratic Party, and since it has been amply demonstrated that they have no use for us, and they use us as cannon fodder every 4 years or every 2 years for congressional races, we're just supposed to show up and vote and then go away, get out of their hair. That's the only relationship we have, a predatory one. And since that is the reality, and we can prove it, our constituencies are the ones that are hurting. I go back to this, the odd thing about this parade. A couple of the people acting like they're political ambassadors from the Democratic Party, as if they never were themselves part of the gay community. They are not prepared to sacrifice their own political profiles to suggest, hey, you know, I'm gay. They're not that courageous. They believe their political lives will be severely injured, if not destroyed, if that were known. So they're quiet about it. They're walking along as if they're visiting. They are full-fledged citizens of that community, and it's been known for a long time. So, that's what I mean. We don't have the courage to see to our interests, and we sustain this kind of damage over and over and over again to the point where we clearly see that it has had an anesthetic effect. What do I mean by that? We are so used to the self-deprecating exercise of supporting something that has no intention of taking care of our political fortunes and guarding and safeguarding our political fortunes and interests, that we are numb to it. We are numb to the insults. We are immune to these flagrant violations that occur routinely. Do you think in Chicago, if the people who put Rahm Emanuel into office, do you think if they were serious that Chicago will have the kind of police brutality problem it has now, or police corruption problem that it has now, or the education dilemma that it has now, if they took themselves seriously and they exacted a price from the Democratic Party for flagrantly violating the so-called contract between the people who are governed and the people who are elected to govern them? No. Because that's the result of this anesthetic effect. They know this is not going to change anything. But there would be people fighting each other over who supports Rahm Emanuel and why they should support Rahm Emanuel. Do you really believe that there is a definitive difference between a Hillary Clinton and a Donald Trump? I mean, in the scheme of things, you really think that? But there are people who are absolutely married to the idea, devoted to her support, despite what the evidence is showing. That's the anesthetic effect. And you get that anesthetic effect after repeated acts of betrayal are not dealt with. Bernie Sanders' betrayal, his total capitulation here should be used as an example of what will not be tolerated by a constituency that fervently and in good faith placed their votes in his hands. He should be made an example. You don't do this and get away with it. You don't decide that Hillary gets our vote. You don't decide that the Democratic Party, which we abhor, gets our vote. That's not your decision. And you are not going to operate as a one-man band. We made you relevant. We placed you in orbit. We gave you power. You don't have it. We gave it to you. And therefore, we're taking it back. That should be the attitude. Nothing personal. Nothing personal. It's just business. Break this anesthetic effect of voting in a manner that is contrary to logic and certainly contrary to your interests. Break it. You have nothing to lose. What exactly do voters have to lose? Nothing. Some 20 years or so ago, and this happened in a voting booth of all places, I was stunned. I was stunned. I was a very, very conscientious voter. And I found myself in a voting booth. And I was absolutely on fire, insulted by this process and what it was saying to me. I don't consider myself exceptionally intelligent. I know a thing or two. But the process was asking me to decide, yes or no, on a referendum that involves hundreds of millions of dollars. And I was informed about this referendum in about three or four lines. That was a description of a project that was to be funded to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars, described in just three or four lines. And my job as a civic-minded individual, an ardent voter, a responsible person, was to decide yes or no based on that information. I said, well, this is kind of stupid. And it assumes that I am stupid. And I decided then and there, in that booth, on that very day, I will no longer participate in any process that says I'm an idiot and not entitled to information that gives me a reasonable rationale for making a decision as a citizen. And I will not vote ever again unless there is a compelling reason for me to do so. Sad to say, since then and up until now, I have found no compelling reason to vote for anything. I made up my mind right there in the voting booth. It will not happen to me again. I will not be so disregarded and insulted. But I keep looking, and I am adopting to some degree Jesse Jackson's invocation to keep hope alive. I keep keeping hope alive that at some point we will see someone emerge who is true, who says what he or she means and means what he or she says, who is organically grown leadership, and who has the guts to understand that leadership is given, not taken, given. And your job as a leader is singular. Your job is to enact the will of the people who are putting everything they have and pouring it into you to support you as a part, as an expression of collective power. That is why to this very day, Adam Clayton Powell Jr. is so revered as a political leader, a consummate politician. Everything that that means. Because his whole heart was with his people. And it was not a case of geography. Yes, he was a congressman from Harlem, but he spoke not just for Black America, he spoke for poor America, and he spoke globally for all poor people. And, may I add, at a time when he couldn't even get his hair cut in the congressional barbershop, and he was not allowed to eat in the congressional dining room, because he was Black, he nonetheless was one of the most prolific legislators in history. Deal with that, Charlie Rangel. You can't shine a light on that man. To this day. So, I watched this whole thing unfold. And it seemed simply, well, Bernie Sanders has come to the predictable end. And I say, well, if that is the case, let the people pronounce it. And let them explain what that means. And let them hold him publicly accountable for being number four in a series of charlatans who decided that the purpose of these broad constituencies bringing themselves together to launch him into orbit as a catalyst for change, that they made the wrong choice. But they could correct it by letting the record reveal that they are publicly canceling his credentials. And that indeed, they are well equipped to take it from here. Thanks so much for listening and joining me today and giving me some room to stretch out on this subject. It has been bothering me for some time, having been talking about this since September last year. But it's good that we have been able to follow the progression. And we're not talking out of turn. We gave enough room. We gave the benefit of time, the benefit of doubt, and Bernie Sanders has failed on both counts. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Meditations and Molotovs with Vincent Emanuele. You want to stay tuned for that. Great program. You can reach me at Lead Stories, L-E-I-D Stories, at gmail.com. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. I thank you so much for listening today. Bye-bye.